Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. Jacob Birch, Eric Steven, neither you or I have slept a lot over the last few days. So this is going to be a sleepy podcast in honor of the sleepy offense of the Los Angeles Dodgers.
And remember how the Dodgers had 8 starters in spring training?
Yeah.
Now they don't have a staff. So this is going to be a fun one. So it's a weird time.
We're going to figure all that out, cover all of that, do a rewind, do some questions from Craig. It's a trivia-loaded episode for both of us, so we're going to do our best there. All of that after this. So it's just a crap list from top to bottom. So we'll start with the crappiest news. Certainly the crappiest news. The offense might be crappier right now, but...
If you're, you know, the Dodger Stadium has been what? It's like 27% capacity. They've had about 15,000 fans every game. People didn't go to games last year. So you're thinking, man, I can't wait to go to a Dodger game this summer, you know, fully like vaccinated perhaps or whatever, and go watch one of the best young starters they have in Dustin May. And now you might have to wait until like 2023 to do that because he's going to have Tommy John surgery. So, like, yeah, everything about like the last 2 weeks we already knew this. Like the last 2 weeks were kind of just bad for the Dodgers, right? Like they haven't really been playing well for a while. It's extended into this week. Like we're in a third week of this. But when I in my week in review, the picture was Dustin May walking off the mound. At this point, let's see. We did not know the extent, but it was like pretty clear that it was a major like elbow injury, and you know it was just like waiting for the MRI. But the title of the post was, you know, after like you know the week 5 in review or whatever. It can always get worse. and I was like, oh no. And then, yeah, so like, yeah, it's, yeah, it got worse. Like, I don't know. So he left. So this is Saturday in Milwaukee. Dustin May, he had a shooting sensation in his arm in the second inning. So he left with 2 outs in the second. He felt it on one, he threw like, 2 curveballs and then a fastball. He winced on the fastball. I guess afterwards he said he felt the pain on one of the curveballs. So that's when he came out. He's been mixing in like the curveball more. His big thing was like his 2-seam fastball, you know, basically a sinker, but it's like 100 and then, moves like crazy, but he wasn't really missing bats because he was kind of all over the place, and he wasn't getting his other pitches over. This year, he's gotten those other pitches, curve, 4-seam fastball, and he's been wonderful. You know, 2.74 ERA. He only had 23 innings pitched, but he was really good. 3.24 FIP. It was 4.62 last year, even though his, like, overall numbers were fine. The biggest thing was he almost doubled his strikeout rate. He was, like, in the lower third of the league. Like, it was 19.6% last year, you know, well below the league average. This year, he's like, he was top 10, 37.6. So he was doing like everything right. He's only 23. He was like coming into his own. He seized the fifth starter spot with a like stellar spring. So like everything was sort of looking up. And then boom, he's going to have the surgery next week, next Tuesday in LA. So it's a real, it's just a huge bummer all the way around. You know, I don't like the sentiment where, well, he'll probably come back stronger, you know, like from that. Like, I don't think that's the case, or you shouldn't think of it that way. His career's not over, but it's like, you know, like just look at the current Dodger rotation, right? Like, Walker Buehler had Tommy John surgery coming out of college, and he's like, he's the Dodgers' game one starter, basically. Julio Urias had major shoulder surgery, and he was like one of their best pitchers in the postseason. He closed out the last 2 series. So, like, things, you know, can get better, but these next like this next year and a half is just going to suck for him and for like Dodgers fans waiting for him to get back, and it's like a significant blow to the team, right? Like for all the stuff that was going wrong with the Dodgers, like the starting pitching has been sort of propping them up, and like the reason where you look at a lot of teams, you know, how do we avoid a losing streak? If you have like a really good starting pitcher going every day, then you're like in really good shape because you're very rarely going to like just have a stretch where nothing's working right. Right. So, you know, if you can count on the starters, like you have a pretty good shot. And that's how basically been propping the Dodgers up because they've been really bad. But now, like the cracks are like starting to appear and get larger. They have like just no room for error, like everywhere and like on the roster, everything. So the timing of this like was bad in that they're just about to end today. In fact, today's gonna well they were rained out Monday, but like the schedule was 14 games in 14 days. And then they were going to do a bullpen game Friday in Milwaukee to give the five starters an extra day of rest, which they like to do whenever possible. And then, of course, the first day after that, May gets hurt. And so they already do the bullpen game Friday. They called up Edwin Yuseta. We've talked about this before. Last year, the preseason like pronunciation guide or whatever, it said Yuseta, but it's actually Yuseta. So good to know. That's the other thing. It's good to like actually cover the players as opposed to just reading about them or whatever. Like you could actually get the actual pronunciation, so that was good. So Tax bullpen goes bullpen game Friday, and then May immediately gets hurt, so it's essentially bullpen game Saturday. So they're like really hurting. They go into the Cubs series, and then rainout Monday sort of threw a wrench into things because then they do a doubleheader Tuesday. Originally, Walker Buehler was going to start Monday. They moved him to today on Wednesday, and they went with Kershaw, who was already going to be Tuesday starter, and then Trevor Bauer. With the speculation is that Trevor Bauer's been angling to start like on 3 days rest whenever possible. But the way the rotation stands out, they're off Thursday. They have off days next week on Monday and Thursday. But if they don't, the rainout meant they have to keep everyone on a full rest. They're going to have to do a bullpen game Saturday against the Angels or start Bauer or Clayton Kershaw on short rest. And as much as you might dismiss starting Kershaw, they pulled Kershaw yesterday after one inning because he threw 39 pitches, gave up four runs. It was very bad. He walked Javi Baez, for God's sakes. So it was bad. So I think part of the reason they pulled him, because he threw 39 pitches, they actually probably could have pulled him like before that inning was over and been justified in doing so. But part of the speculation was that they pulled him just to give them the option to possibly pitch on short rest on Saturday. Because the way it works now, I still think the most likely scenario if they go this route is Bauer on short rest and then Kershaw on regular rest Sunday. But the most likely thing is bullpen game, but like, we'll see. Because if you do bullpen game, then you have, let's say Kershaw Sunday, or it's Bauer Sunday, then the next person doesn't pitch till Tuesday. So, like, one of them is going to have to wait, like, a week, and they usually don't like to do that. So, I don't know, it's weird. Maybe they will, but who knows? But it's a mess right now, basically. Oh, and then also, like, using all these bullpen games, they're getting, like, guys hurt. Also, since we recorded last week, I think this happened after we recorded, Bruiser Gratterall also went on the aisle with forearm tightness. So his MRI came back like better, clean, basically, but he's still sore. So like there's no real timetable for him to return. So that's a bummer. The Dodgers have, four opening day relievers on the aisle currently. Also Joe Kelly, who we learned last week with an interview with WEEI in Boston. I just want to point out, Joe Kelly has not talked to on Zoom to Dodger reporters yet, but he opened up about this with a Boston radio station that he had significant shoulder surgery in November. He said it felt like fire ants were eating his shoulder. He pitched, this was like mid-season when he was suspended, when he was feeling this, and he still pitched after. Like, it was one of those things, I think you're not going to hurt it more. It's just what you can sort of tolerate. So that might explain some of the weirdness. Like, he was, remember, he was throwing all those curveballs, and he's always wild, but it was, like, even weirder than usual. But, yeah, so he could be back relatively soon. One of the people on the DL is Tony Gonsolin. They're stretching him out right now to start, but he almost had to start from scratch. He had shoulder inflammation. So he's not going to be ready till like the last week of May, probably. So you get to a point with all these off days, you might have to do a bullpen game Saturday, but whether you do or don't, you're still going to, you have to use a fifth starter roughly like, I think it's like May 18th. And then maybe one other time after that. So you're looking at least two, possibly three or four bullpen games before Gonsolin's ready. I asked about, like, if they want Gonsolin to go at least, like, five innings or be able to do that. So I asked if, you know, if you're going to do a bullpen game, wouldn't you just call up Gonsolin if he can go, like, two or three? And Dave Roberts made a lot of sense in this. He said, you know, if we call up Gonsolin and then he goes two or three, they still are going to treat him like a starter, so he's not available in the interim days. So you lose a roster spot, whereas I think what they'll end up doing is sort of mix and match and, like, call up, you know, just a fresh arm for the day of the bullpen game and then option one guy out, and then he's not going to be available for the next one, but they'll have another guy to do that with. So they're going to just play musical chairs, I think, reading between the lines there. But yeah, it's just going to be a mess, like, for a while, and then you just have to sort of get through that. So, you know, five bullpen guys on the DL, or IL, counting Kelly. It's seven if you count Ferguson and Canely. I mean, they weren't going to pitch this year anyway, but it's just a lot. But that said, so this is where, like, it's never one thing, right? You can just say, oh, well, the bullpen sucks, like, that's why they're losing, but it's really not just that. Like, the bullpen is being put in situations that are, like, impossible because it's like a combination between that and the bad offense. So the Dodgers, remember, they were 13-2, right? There were these articles of what are they going to do? Like, what's going to happen when they break the wins record? Are the Dodgers going to win 120 games? Blah, blah, blah. They're 4-12 since then. It's not only like the worst record in the National League, only the Tigers are worse in the American League. So they're like 2-13. They've been so bad. But so the offense here, so here's the thing. In the last 17 games, that includes the front end of this, was a 2-0 win in San Diego. They've scored three runs or less in 11 times in those 17 games. They're averaging under four runs a game, hitting .201, .314, .339. So this is like almost 3 weeks. It's really bad. And that average is like being propped up by like two huge games. They scored eight runs last Wednesday afternoon, just after we recorded. So they actually have two wins since we recorded, which I thought was a high number given the way they've been playing. That was a 2-0 game until the eighth, and then they blew it open. And then on Sunday, they just went off and won 16-4 in the last day in Milwaukee. That was after losing the first three games of the series. In that game, Pollock drove in eight. Matt Beatty drove in seven. We'll get to that in a second. But, like, generally, like, they've just been bad. Like, everyone points to Edwin Rios because he just has the over skid going. He's 0 for his last 32. There's really not been that many people hitting like Matt Beatty has. Matt Beatty is sort of like, I guess, in a way, sort of a path to what they might be able to do with Rios. Like, Beatty, like, early on, he barely played. He started, like, once in the first 12 games. They optioned him, and there's been no minor leagues until this week. So he had to go to the alternate site. They still had some games, so he was at the alternate site for about a week. He played three games against the Padres. He said he got 14 at-bats. He also worked with the hitting coaches on the other days. So he was getting, you know, very, like, not one-on-one, but, like, you know, he got to work on his, essentially playing regularly and just working on his stuff. He was back up within a week, and he's basically done nothing but hit since. He's only started, like, five games. He's supposed to start today. But he's, like, I think he's, like, 9 for 17. He has, like, 6-something on base percentage. He had a grand slam on Sunday. He's just been going off. Now, Rios is 0 for his last 32. His last hit was April 13th. Now, the problem is, with all this, it's easy to just say, send that guy down. But then, really, who are you bringing up, right? Like, are they going to... They're not going to call up, like, Zach Rex or something. Or DJ Peters looked bad when he was up. So, like... it could just be an extra pitcher. They might, you know, do that. But the other thing is, like, there was this interim period in the last, like, 5 days where there were no alternate site games and no AAA season yet. AAA season starts Thursday, so maybe this week, if they choose to do that with Rios, I don't know if they will, but that's an option, right? He could just go down, even if it's, like, a week just to work on whatever, get regular at-bats, and then that way, and then he comes back up, whatever, but even like Gavin Lux wasn't really hitting until the last couple days. Corey Seager's been slumping. Mookie Betts was slumping. So it's been bad. Max Muncy was slumping. He homered yesterday in the second game of the doubleheader. It was his first homer since April 15th. It was his first extra base hit since April 15th. He was 3-for-48 in between with 23 strikeouts, but he also had 16 walks because he's been part of it. He's been being pitched around, but also he has such a great eye. So that combination, right, like sort of a shaky bullpen, being asked to do too much, and an offense that makes every game close, it's really setting the Dodgers up for failure. And I think it's been like sort of emblematic in the last few like extra inning games. So the day this sort of slump started was the day after an extra inning win in the first game in San Diego. That was the peak David Price moment. He's also on the DL, or IL, excuse me, by the way. Where he pitched well later in that game. The Dodgers scored 5 in the 11th, I think, to win that game. They haven't done much in extra innings since. They've lost all 4 games. They've had an extra inning since then. And I think if you look at it, it sort of shows why. So April 25th was the last game in LA against the Padres. That was just a bad game in general. The Dodgers were up 7-1 in the 7th. And they blew that game. Three relievers gave up 2 runs to blow it. Jimmy Nelson was asked to get the save. He did not. He gave up 2 runs in the 9th. He actually pitched a scoreless 10th after that. So that was one of their better extra inning performances. And then Garrett Clevenger lost the game in the 11th. The Dodgers in that game scored 0 runs in both extra innings. And just as a reminder, extra inning games or extra innings start with the guy who made the last out in the previous inning on second base with nobody out. So, it's an offensive advantage. The idea is try to end games as early, not as early by time, but just early by inning, so you're not taxing your pitching staff. Dodgers have found a way to somehow do both, to tax their pitching staff and lose. April, the next night when they got home, the Dodgers lost it to the Reds. Kenley gave up a 2-run homer in the 10th. So it's not just the low-end guys, but the offense didn't score in the 10th. The second game in Milwaukee? Oh, no. This was the Saturday game. The Dodgers only scored 1 run in the first 2 games in Milwaukee. They scored a little bit in the third game. That was the game May got hurt. But then, Alex Vesia, oh man. In the 10th inning, he walked 2 to load the bases, gave up an unearned run, and the Dodgers were up 1. He started the 11th, and then he walked 2 again, and then was just immediately removed.
And the Dodgers were up 2 in that one.
Yeah, they were up 2. So we were at a point, Mitch White comes in. He actually looked okay. He gave up a sac fly. So the Dodgers are up 1. He got to 2 outs. And there was a point in this game where it would have been hilarious because Alex Vesia would have got the win with 4 walks in recording 3 outs and would have had a 0 ERA for the game. because both the Ghost Runner, not Ghost Runner, but the Free Runner is considered unearned. But then Mitch White gave up two singles with two outs to lose that game. And so the CEO ended up giving up four runs. The offense in that game, actually, that was their best like game scoring-wise. They scored one in the 10th, two in the 11th. So it was, they still lost. And then last night in the second game of the doubleheader, these are seven-inning games, so the extra inning starts on the 8th, which is always weird. But we were talking about this before we started. On the baseball reference, like, schedule page, if you look like yesterday's doubleheader, it'll usually, if it's a weird inning game, it'll show it. So, like, yesterday it says, in the first game it says 7, and the next game it says 9, even though, you know, 9 is a normal game. But anyway, so Mitch White, the Dodgers are up 2 in this one, in the 10th, in the, excuse me, in the 8th. But then with 2 outs again, Mitch White gave up an absolute, I believe the phrase Chad Moriyama likes to use is down the dick fastball. And Javi Baez just absolutely crushed it. 2-run homer to tie it. Garrett Clevenger again comes in, gives up the walk-off single in the 11th after the Dodgers didn't score. So the Dodgers scored 2 runs in the 8th, 0 in the 9th. They also didn't score that game till the 7th. So it was just, it's been bad. So yesterday, you know, Dave Roberts was asked about specifically White and Clevenger because, you know, they're pretty low on the totem pole, like in the grand scheme of things, but they aren't now. And that's sort of the point. And Roberts, yeah, look, they're major league pitchers. We're throwing them into the fire and, you know, it's just, we're just going to try to encourage them basically. So they're in a tough spot, but like, if you just look at the total of these extra inning games, the opponents have scored in these last 4 extra inning games. So there's been 7 total extra innings. The opponents have scored in 6 of them, scoring 10 total runs. The Dodgers have only scored in 3 of those 7 innings, scoring 5 total runs. They've lost all 4. I looked at run expectancy. Now, it's hard finding updated data on this, but it's base out situation. Like, if there's a runner on second and nobody out, Baseball Prospectus says this. This is actually from 2019, but I don't think the numbers vary that much year to year. They might. So this might be a little off, but just as a general, this is just a general way to look at it. But runner on second, nobody out. That inning, from that point, a team averages 1.14 runs in that inning. Now, the likelihood of just scoring a single run or more is 60.7%. So if you use that sort of expectation, if you play 7 extra innings, you're expected to score in about 4 of them. The Dodgers only scored in 3, but their opponents scored in 6. You're expected to score 8 total runs. The Dodgers only scored 5. Their opponents have 10. So that sort of shows you one of the reasons sort of why they're hurting right now. And it's just, it's been brutal. Yeah.
We didn't even talk about defense, which has also been bad.
Yeah. Specifically like Corey Seager's defense, but he's not alone. Like, Gavin Lux had a terrible throw yesterday. I think it's just slip, but it was just bad. But Corey Seager has had so many, like, just under his glove, out of his reach. Like, he's just been not good. And, like, all of his, like, publicly available defensive numbers are well below average. Dave Roberts sort of continues to say it's a small sample. I think he's just sticking up for Seager at this point, but, like, it's been brutal, like, honestly, to watch, and, like, it just seems like something happens all the time. There's just been really sloppy plays, like, all around. So, yeah, they're not playing good baseball for almost 3 full weeks now, but they did have that, 16-run game?
Yeah.
So I have a trivia question for you related to that.
All right.
So, A.J. Pollock, it was the 7th game in Dodgers history that a player had 8 or more RBI. How many of the other players who did this can Jacob name?
I will flail and throw some names at the board after this. AJ Pollock had 8 RBIs. It's the 7th time, so 6 previous lead times a Dodger has had 8 or more RBIs in a single game. Okay, so this is LA and Brooklyn.
Yes.
Has any player done it more than once?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's what I sort of worded it a little weird.
No, that's fine. I just want to kind of clarify. So there are How many names? Five names? One player did it twice?
Five other names. Yes, yep. That's right.
All right.
Would you like? Yeah, if you want hints, I'm here.
I'll throw. Let's say I'll get two wrong, and then I'll take some hints. James Loney.
He is one of the co-record holders for most RBIs in a game with 9. Coors Field, 2006.
Sean Green.
No, Sean Green. His highest was 7 RBIs in his 4 home run game. It was 6-6-6-7.
Yeah, I thought maybe he had hit 8. All right, so that's one of my whiffs.
I mean, when you hit 4 home runs in a double, it's a pretty good bet, and that you're gonna have a lot of RBIs. But
Mike Piazza
never did.
Okay, I'm gonna go one more, and then I'll take some hints. Matt Kemp.
No.
Okay, I will take some hints.
So the first hint is only one Brooklyn player has done this. Okay. And this person co-holds the RBI record with James Loney.
Duke Snider?
No. I mean, you're right to
Yeah. I'm going through the
yeah.
Zach Wheat?
No, aww. Not Zach Wheat.
A boy can dream. Campy.
Nope.
Jackie.
No, think of the power hitter that batted I think he batted cleanup.
You're insinuating I know anything about the Boys of Summer at this point.
Gil Hodges. Okay, that's right. So the other one. Two of them are in the Jacob Birch era.
I've named almost all of them.
Two of them are in the Jacob Birch marriage era.
Okay.
Aside from Pollock.
Okay.
One of them, the most recent before Pollock, hit a home run in the same day that Rob Segedin hit his first home run.
I don't. Uh-huh. That doesn't help at all.
You don't have that date transcribed in a pillow or something.
Cody Bellinger.
Nope.
Corey Seager.
No.
There's not a lot of players that can make this on the marriage list. You know,
I'll give you another hint. Butter and Eggman.
Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He hit 3 home runs against the Reds. In 2016, I believe 2 of them were off Homer Bailey, who he absolutely destroyed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, former second highest paid Dodger.
All right, I'm tapping.
No,
out.
only one of the home runs was off Homer Bailey. Amazingly,
I'm tapping.
The one prior to that, Yasmani Grandal, in 2015.
That was going to take quite a few guesses.
4 for 4, 2 homers, 8 RBIs. Before James Loney. The other one was Ron Say, 1974, 8 RBIs, 2 home runs. Gil Hodges had an 8 RBI game in 1949, and his 9 RBI game was his 4 home run game in 1950.
Okay. I got there.
Yeah, you did. You did pretty well.
I think I hit expectations, is what I would say.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. Dodgers Rewind.
Yeah, so I talked about Max Muncy earlier. He's been walking a ton. He walked 27 times in April. That's the most in April in Dodgers history. But, you know, part of that is they didn't use to start till April 15th. So, whatever. You'll see. But 27 walks in a month is still a lot. We'll get to that in a little bit. But the only L.A. Dodger with more walks in a month than Muncy's 27 was Jim Wynn in 1975 in June. He walked 29 times. So his nickname, Jim Wynn, was the toy cannon because he was 5'9", but he was an amazing power hitter. So he actually died, Jim Wynn did, last year. It was either, I think it was March 2020. So he comes to the Dodgers just when they were really getting good. And 1974, they actually traded Claude Osteen for him. Claude Osteen was like a stalwart in the rotation, like linking back to the Koufax Drysdale era, sort of the link between those teams and the 70s teams, him and Don Sutton. So in a span of 2 days, they traded Claude Osteen for Jimmy Wynn to the Astros. And then they also traded Willie Davis to the Expos for Mike Marshall, the reliever. And then Mike Marshall ended up winning the Cy Young. You can make a case. Steve Garvey ended up winning the MVP, I think, because he had more RBIs in 1974. He was a relatively unknown, or like that was his breakout year. Jim Wynn was better, I think, for the Dodgers in 1974. They won 102 games. He hit 32 home runs. He drove in 108. He was actually just the second Dodger to hit 30 home runs since they moved to L.A. So at this time, this was only their 16th year in L.A., but still only two times hitting 30 before that. So he had a 151 OPS plus. Now, in 1975, his numbers sort of dipped a little bit. He only hit 248, but he still walked 110 times. Now, there's only, since moving to L.A., a Dodgers player has walked 100 times only six times, and Jimmy Wynn has two of those, like the first two, actually. So even with like a relatively down year, he still had a 134 OPS plus that year. So my computer, I was trying to load something because I had some notes on this, and I put it in a separate section. Let's see here. For some reason, it's not coming up. That's okay. So I had the wrong link. My apologies. But so just Wynn was really good. And then what, 19... I want to say he... I'm going to read an excerpt from Jay Jaffe's book, the Cooperstown Casebook. Let's see. The toy cannon was a 5'10 spark plug with power. I think I shorted him an inch. I apologize. Outstanding control of the strike zone, good defense, a player whom Bill James compared to early career teammate Joe Morgan, while ranking Wynn 10th all-time among center fielders in the new Bill James Historical Baseball Abstract. So, like, he was really good. I was looking at this, too. He sort of had wanted out of Houston for a while. I found an article last year in Sports Illustrated from 1974 from Ron Fumerte. Says... but there's nothing like quite like a new suit of clothes. After the trade with Houston for Claude Osteen, Walter Alston advised Wynn that he could bat third, play center field, swing at the ball any way he damn well pleased, as long as he hit it from time to time and have complete freedom on the bases. So that sort of helped him have a breakout year. So he was really good. It was just like he only played two seasons with the Dodgers, but he, you know, they were two great seasons, and so, like, very, very, very memorable. So, I because of those 27 walks that Muncy had, Wynn had 29, there's only one other L.A. Dodger to walk 27 times in a month. Can you name him?
I'm sure I can't. You want to give me any hint?
Yeah.
I almost hate it when you give me hints because the expectation I should get it right goes up. But I'll try it.
Yeah. So, it loaded. Thank God this time. So I will give you the hint. The first hint is this player did also play in Brooklyn, though he never walked 27 times in a month for Brooklyn.
Duke Snider?
No. Duke Snider did walk 27 times in 1956 with Brooklyn.
These, like, pre-modern era players with walk records are so hard because, you know, they weren't celebrating the walkers of the era. But
this person also holds the Dodgers rookie record for walks in a season, which was not the season that I'm in question here.
Jackie?
Mm-mm. Jackie did walk 27 times in 1952, June, but not L.A.
I'm taking one more guess and then retiring from name. Jacob Birch names Brooklyn players. Jim Gilliam.
You got it.
Yes.
27 times, June 1959. So good job. Nailed it. Now the tables can turn.
Yeah. Thanks to our friend, whose name will come up later. I can't spoil it. People will be shocked.
Yeah, they'll be like, what segment are they going to?
I have a segment that is going to turn the tables. It's time for
With Jens and Craig. We love them.
I know you're shocked, but it's our friend Craig here to turn the tables on you. I've got...
Go for it. Just I was saying before, questions from Craig's star, Craig Manami. His birthday's Friday, so happy birthday, Craig.
Happy birthday, Craig. We'll have to have him on and ask him trivia questions. Good luck.
Questions, buddy.
Yeah. Right. So we have the first set of trivia questions for you. This season is the 100-year anniversary of Babe Ruth setting the Major League Baseball record with 457 total bases.
That's so wild.
Here are some total questions about that statistic. One Dodger has a 400 total base plus season period. Who was the Dodger?
So when I saw this, my immediate, I went to the Jacob Birch School of answering, and my immediate thought was Duke Snider, but that's not my answer. then I sort of, I remember a guy who comes up a lot in, like, he has the doubles record, I believe, for the franchise. So I think it is in the high offensive era of the 30s. So I'm going to say Johnny Frederick.
Incorrect.
Okay. Wow. Then this is tough. Because 400 is a lot. I don't think he couldn't. I'll just go back to Duke Snider then.
Nope. I'm looking up to see Duke Snider's record is 378.
What a loser. Okay. Now I'm having trouble. So the problem is, so Mike Piazza, when he hit like 360 whatever and 40 home runs, he's only at like 320 without doubles and triples, and he did not hit 70 doubles. So wow. So it'd have to be a guy with a lot of doubles and a lot of home runs. So is it Sean Green?
It is not Sean Green.
Is it Adrian Beltre?
It is not Adrian Beltre. This player had, I'm looking right now, 35 home runs and 48 doubles this particular season. 11 triples.
Wow. Okay. 35 home runs and 48 doubles.
This player, I'm going to give you one more hint, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm going to make sure. Played his entire Dodger career in Brooklyn.
What a jerk way to say it. Wow, so 48 doubles and 35 home runs. Dodger career. So Gil came to L.A. And Jackie didn't hit 35. It's not like... Is it Dolph Camilli?
Nope.
So I don't know then.
Babe Herman.
Damn it. I was right with the 30s thing. Yeah. But yeah.
All right. I think this is the second time you've missed Babe Herman. He is your Zach Wheat.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So just start with Babe Herman until it sticks.
From now on, yeah.
Moving on to more recent times, one player accrued 400 total bases in both 2000 and 2001. Name that player.
This is MLB?
Yep.
Oh, of course. Babe Herman. No.
He did have seasons without the Dodgers. That would be fun.
I think 98, 2001. Oh, damn. What was the other year? 98, 99. I don't know any. My guess for this is Sammy Sosa.
Incorrect. You may want to remember that name for later, though.
All right. Wow, 400 total bases. So, again, hits, home runs. Oh, A-Rod.
Nope.
Well, then, you're lying.
This is 2000 and 2001, just to reiterate.
Yeah, yeah. But so right, so 2001, Bonds is already at 292 with the home runs alone. So, Bonds.
Nope. Another name you might want to remember for later.
All right. Then I don't know.
This is a ballpark fueled record.
Oh. Wait, but. Oh, Todd Helton.
Yep. There you go. Mm-hmm. 405 in 2000, 402 in 2001. Mm-hmm. So since 2001, three other players had 400 or more total bases since 2001. Can you name them? Excuse me, just in 2001, four players total. Todd Helton's one of them, had more than 400. Can you name the three other players?
So if it's 2001, so you have, I'm going to go with Barry Bonds.
Hey, that's one of them.
I'm going to go with Sammy Sosa.
Hey, look at that. Barry Bonds had 411, Sammy Sosa had 425.
And then there's one other, you said?
Yep, this player had more total bases than Barry Bonds.
So Luis Gonzalez hit 57 home runs, so I'm going with him.
You are correct. There you go. Well done. But you know what? It's such a fun week. We have another set of trivia for Eric.
Oh, God.
Justin Turner hit his seventh pitch hit home run for the Dodgers on Tuesday. He also is the active leader on the team with 24 pinch hits. Can Eric name the other three current Dodgers with double-digit pinch hits?
Now, before I answer, can I ask, is this pinch hits with the Dodgers or just career total?
This are, I am fairly sure this is with the Dodgers. Two I know for sure. One I will check for you real quick.
Double digit pinch hits. So just for longevity, Corey Seager?
No.
Because he always starts.
Yep.
Now I'm just mad. Okay.
I can't 100%. This would be true regardless if this one player was included some
other team. Gotcha. Okay. okay. So, wait. Double digit?
Yep.
Matt Beatty?
Yep, with 10.
Yeah.
On the dot.
and then what about Austin Barnes?
17.
Nice.
So you're missing the one player who or may not have some hits with another team. I'm guessing Craig did this to DB just Dodgers, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. Chris Taylor.
There you go.
Yeah.
With 21. Four other LA Dodgers have seven or more pinch hit home runs. A few of these players were around my viewing times. Can Eric name them? I have a hint to exclude two that I'm going to give you right now. Andre Ethier and Kike Hernandez each hit six pinch hit home runs.
All right. Dave Hansen?
Leads the list with 13.
I see. I believe he had seven in 1 year. Matthew Ryan Kemp?
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
One of these players, both to me, defines pinch hit home runs and is also a former Dodgers Rewind.
Almedo Signs?
There you go, with 8.
Killer Tomato. One more.
Two more.
Oh, God. Oh, my entire equilibrium is thrown off. No. Let's see.
It is two more. Justin, if we don't count Justin Turner, I apologize. Okay. We're talking about Justin Turner, so he doesn't count. So it's two more that you haven't named.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't around long enough. I'll just, no, because I don't, damn it. Todd Hollinsworth?
Nope. You have one 90s player and one 70s player.
Oh. Still mad at this. Joe Ferguson?
Nope.
Rick Monday?
No, that'd be sweet.
Okay. I'm gonna switch back to the 90s. I mean, he started all the time, but getting to seven. What about Eric Karros?
Nope. I think that's
I give up. Yeah.
Your 90s player is Billy Ashley.
Come on. Yeah.
Your 70s player is Lee Lacy.
All
right. With a minimum of 50 pinch hit plate appearances. I'd like to note going into this, you were confident.
Oh, so I, full disclosure, I never scrolled down to number two. But that was a pure cut and paste. I didn't read. I read question one, and I'm like,
and yet Babe Herman still.
Yeah, foiled exactly. You.
Chris
as
Taylor.
Long as I don't have to think about Babe Herman. Yeah.
Chris Taylor's third with a minimum of 50 mm-hmm. plate appearances. Pinch hitting plate appearances. Chris Taylor is third with a .328 batting average. Can Eric name the top two pinch hitting batting averages with at least 50 plate appearances?
I assume this is LA.
This is LA.
Okay. So I think like Manny Mota's like .311 or something like that. Maybe not.
It's above that, but you are correct to not.
Yeah.
Craig's hint was that it is not Dodger legend Manny Mota, and it is not Dave Hansen.
Mm. Wow.
321, by the way, is Manny Mota's.
I think, like, I knew there was a 3-1. No, I'm just kidding. Like, Lenny Harris pinch hit a lot, but his numbers were pretty bad, so I'm not using him. 50. Oh, dang it.
One of these is over two seasons. and one is over.
Wow, that's a lot of.
10 seasons, I think. I'm reading those right.
Okay. All right. 10 seasons. I am bad at this. Let's go with why am I just like completely blanking on this? Let's say Mike Marshall.
Nope.
Yeah, I quit. I
would like you to name this. I actually don't know this. What were your favorite players favorite hitters in the 80s?
Pedro Guerrero.
Hey, you said one of the answers.
All right.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure, but I don't want to like lock that in. With yeah. a .344 batting average over nice. 68 appearances. Mm-hmm. Jeff Treadway is the other player.
God damn it. All right. Yeah. Wow.
All right. We're done with trivia. Let's move on. It's certainly too early to panic, but I wanted to know what Eric and Jacob thought about adding to the 2021 payroll, and do you think the Dodgers would promote someone like Bobby Miller this season?
They're absolutely going to add to the payroll because they're going to have to acquire people in July. Bobby Miller started at High A Great Lakes. I think like Brock Stewart did the Class A to the majors within a season. They're not going to do that with Bobby Miller. You know, they have enough guys, and I think once people start to come back, it'll be less of a need. They also, if they're going to call up a starter, it'll be like Josiah Gray, but not now, maybe in a month or two or a couple months or whatever. So, yeah, Bobby Miller is too far down the totem pole to think of him. I guess I'm thinking starter. Bobby Miller could be a reliever, I guess, but like, there's a lot of other options. Like Ryan Pepiot is a better example.
Yeah, I guess that was that's a question I have for you is, you know, they're maybe they're going to try this Kershaw and Saturday thing, but like, are they just going to like patchwork it until Gonsolin's good to go?
Yes, okay. I think so. So like, we didn't even, how has this entire episode not been about Mike Kickham? Like they literally just brought Kickham up to like absorb inning Sunday after the two bullpen games. And thank God, like for them, that Julio Urias went seven on Sunday, looking great again. So then nobody else in the bullpen had to throw Kickham at the last 2 weeks. That was the game they were up like 16-1 or whatever. They won 16-4. Then they DFA'd Kickham the next day. So like, that's the risk, right? Like, I guess if he clears waivers, he has the right to elect free agency. They might convince him to stick around and stay because I think he was basically going to be in the AAA rotation. We'll see if that pans out. But most likely he's just going to leave his free agent. But I think that's the risk with a guy like that. There was a lot of like consternation in the comments, like, why would they do that just to lose him? And it's like, well, it's Mike Kickham. Like, that's what kind of happens with these guys, right? Like, they'll go find another Mike Kickham. Like, that's essentially, I think, what they'll do with some of these guys. So, yeah. And then that way, like, rather than bring up like a prospect where you have to start their clock and then use an option this year right after you use them, I don't see that as a possibility. But I think they're going to, they'll churn through some of the one and done guys if they need to.
I don't know if it's as simple as how good Betts and Seager play. So goes the, excuse me, I'll rephrase that. Mm-hmm. I enunciated incorrectly. I don't know if it's as simple as how good Betts and Seager play. So goes the Dodgers. Yeah. But should Dodger fans just hope those two get going and hope they can get close to 2020 form?
I mean, yeah, they don't even have to be like that good, but like, yeah, just good. And like, and just there's so many, like AJ Pollock started to hit last week. And then, like, you know, Gavin Lux wasn't giving him anything. Muncy was walking but doing nothing else. Like, Bellinger's still, like, at least a couple weeks away from returning. McKinstry's probably the same. And the fact that we're saying, where's Zach McKinstry, shows you, like, how sort of screwed everything is right now. So, like, yeah, they just need, like, those guys to not be terrible. Like, Justin Turner was really good. Chris Taylor's been pretty good. But, like, yeah, they just need to have, like, they have this weird offense too. Like, one of the games the other day in Milwaukee, they had 9 hits. 8 of them were with 2 outs, and they only scored a run because all those innings they had nothing on in the first part of the inning.
I texted just, like, you, so like, brutal. The Dodgers, if the goal of baseball was to get a man on first and second with 2 outs, the Dodgers are buying a boy, just killing
it. They're excellent at extending innings. Unless it's time to score, and it's like that's the other thing. Like, it really is as simple as, like, as long as they keep giving themselves like scoring opportunities, they'll be fine. You know, relatively, like they're gonna hit, like, you know, roughly. Offense is down like around the league, but they could still hit like relative to the league pretty well. So I think the problem was for a little bit of this run is they weren't even giving themselves opportunities to score, and so. I think if you just keep doing that, like, that'll be fine. But yeah, like, at a certain point, it's like, you know, Corey Seager's postseason career numbers were excrement, like, before last season. And he had, like, one of the best postseasons of all time. So you just need to keep giving yourself opportunities and hope that the star players play like star players. And same, Bellinger was, like, not terribly good, but he affected the game, like, on defense. He hit the pennant-winning home run. You know, he had his moments. So, like, yeah, you just need those guys to be close enough to those guys to like, be good. So, and I think it's reasonable to expect, like, also, Edwin Rios, right? He's 0-32. He probably was not going to be, like, a home run every 10 at bat guy for the rest of his career either, right? Like, he could still be a very productive player somewhere in the middle there. So, like, I think he just needs time to figure it out and then play. So we'll see, like, but so I think there's a lot of room to, like, improve just with the people they have, and really nobody wants to hear this because well, we need to change this and this. Well, actually, you just need the guys you have to actually play. So I think that's what it sort of comes down to for this.
Last question, food question. Mm-hmm. The idea of sharing food in a restaurant seems a bit far away yet, but with my birthday coming up this week, I am reminded of going to Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor for birthday parties and sharing their Big Zoo Sundae. If you could have your own ice cream party, and I wish I could, would you make cones, sundaes, or some other ice cream treat?
I'm not a big sundae guy. I like the day of the week sundae's fine, but like, no. I think I like banana split over a sundae, but there's something about a good cone. A waffle cone is awesome. But even a bare bones minimum, thrifty, like sugar cone with the square scoops. Man, that's the good stuff. So I would lean toward cone. I mean, from a logistical standpoint, it's probably way easier to just have like paper bowls or whatever and then, you know, serve it that way. But yeah, cones are great. So I would probably go cone in that regard. With obviously with mint chip and strawberry only. But.
I was going to say waffle cone because let's get this out of the way. Sugar cones are an abomination.
All right.
I just love waffle cones. But no, I think I'm going to...
Waffle cones are way better. No question.
I'm going to represent UCLA, Westwood's own Diddy Reese a little bit and say ice cream sandwich bar. Lots of different cookies, lots of different ice creams. You could do little toppings that you can kind of put in the middle. That's the way to go.
A sugar cookie in those?
No.
That's a solid ice cream. I forgot one of the brands has like a very good sugar cookie ice cream sandwich, like in the occasional grocery freezer. It's really good. It's a good taste. I think I had it with strawberry ice cream, so maybe that played into it, but. It was excellent.
It's Mother's Day weekend, so ice cream's probably going to happen this weekend,
nice.
but not today.
And, you know, from the old O'Malley tradition, the Dodgers always used to serve first place ice cream, but they haven't been in first for a little bit because they sort of played their way out of it. Part of it was like the Giants were sort of doing really well. The Dodgers, as we speak, are, what, 17 and 14? So, like, you know, they've been worse, like, but not much, like, given this. So, I don't know. It's weird. It's been a weird couple weeks. But go eat some ice cream and enjoy some baseball, even if it's terrible baseball, because sometimes you can find, you know, some cool things about it. And thanks for listening, everybody. Well, maybe we'll have more wins to talk about next week, and maybe fewer injuries. Who knows? Thanks for listening. See you.